Shalom Aleichem. Welcome to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond. I'm Leonard Nimoy. This 13-part series features many of the best Jewish stories of the past 150 years, written in English or translated from Russian, Hebrew, or Yiddish. Directed by Joan Micklin Silver, our readers include some of the finest performers of stage, screen, and television: Alan Alda, Lauren Bacall, Claire Bloom, Elliot Gould, Walter Matthau, and many more. The 32 stories in our series may at first seem rather diverse, if not incongruous. They were, after all, written in different languages, at different times, in different countries, and with very different literary styles. Some do not even concern themselves with explicitly Jewish subjects. But as you listen, I think you'll agree that all have this in common. Written by Jewish authors, they somehow reflect a sensibility, a voice, a worldview born of 1,000 years of Jewish life and culture in Central and Eastern Europe. And whether through humor, tragedy, or, as is more often the case, equal measures of both, they struggle with a common question. What does it mean? What can it possibly mean to live as a Jew in the modern world? Today we bring you 4 particularly powerful stories: 3 Gifts by I.L. Peretz, The Shawl by Cynthia Ozick, The Fable of the Goat by S.Y. Agnon, and The Golem, once again by Peretz. We begin with 3 Gifts. On the one hand, 3 Gifts is a moving tribute to the power of religious faith, as 3 simple Jews, confronted with unspeakable violence, find the courage and strength to die as martyrs. But as always, Peretz's religious sensibility is tempered by his skepticism. Even as he honors the dead, he does not spare us a sharply satiric view of heaven, well-honed insights into human nature, and, as the last paragraph makes clear, a biting condemnation of all those, be they in heaven or on earth, who would seek entertainment or salvation at the cost of human suffering. 3 Gifts by I.L. Peretz. Our reader is Joanna Gleason.
Once, long ago, a Jew died somewhere in this world. Well, when a Jew dies, he dies. No one lives forever. He was given a proper funeral and buried with all the honors. The gravestone was laid in place, a son said the mourner's prayer, and the dead man's soul flew up to heaven to be tried by a tribunal of angels. It arrived to find the balance used for weighing good and bad deeds already waiting for it. The counsel for the defense, who was none other than the dead man's former conscience, stepped up with a snow-white bag in his hand and stood by the right-hand scale. The counsel for the prosecution, who was none other than the dead man's evil urges, stepped up with a bag smeared with dirt and stood by the left-hand scale. The white bag contained the man's good deeds, the dirty bag his bad ones. When the defense counsel poured the good deeds onto the right-hand scale, they smelled like the finest fragrance and shone like the stars in the sky. When the prosecutor poured the bad deeds onto the left-hand scale, they were, God help us, as black as coal and smelled like a barrel of pitch. The poor soul stood gaping. It never had dreamed that there could be such a difference between good and bad. Down below in the world it had come from, it often couldn't tell them apart and confused one with the other. The scales floated slowly up and down. One moment one was higher, the next the other. The needle of the balance shifted back and forth, now a hair's breadth to the left, now a hair's breadth to the right. Never more than a hair's breadth, the scales swayed imperceptibly. The man was an ordinary Jew, not much of a sinner, and certainly no saint. His good deeds were as small as his bad ones, little crumbs, little bits of things so tiny you could hardly see them. Still, each time the needle moved a hair to the right, there was rejoicing in the heavens. Each time it moved back to the left, there was such a sigh of sorrow that it reached all the way to the mercy seat. Slowly, single-mindedly, the 2 angels emptied their bags bit by bit and crumb by crumb, like Jews on Simchat Torah, bidding penny by penny for the right to carry the first Torah. But sooner or later every well must run dry. The 2 bags were finally empty. "Finished?" asked the bailiff of the court, an angel himself. The counsel for the defense and the counsel for the prosecution both turned their bags inside out. Nothing was left. The bailiff stepped up to look at the bounds. He looked, and he looked, and the longer he looked, the clearer it became that he was looking at something that had never happened before since the day the world was created. "What's taking you so long?" asked the chief judge. "It's a tie. The needle is right in the middle." The good and bad deeds weighed exactly the same amount. "Are you sure?" asked the chief judge of the heavenly court. "Absolutely." The court recessed to consult and returned with the following verdict. "Since its bad deeds do not outweigh its good ones, this soul cannot be condemned to hell. On the other hand, since its good deeds do not outweigh its bad ones, it cannot be admitted to heaven either. We therefore sentence it to be homeless. Let it wander back and forth between the heavens and the earth until God remembers it and calls it to him in his mercy." The soul was led out of the court by the bailiff, bitterly bewailing its fate. "What are you crying for?" asked the bailiff. "You may never know the joys of paradise, but you won't have to suffer the torments of Gehenna either. Fair is fair." But the soul was not comforted. "Better the greatest tortures," it replied, "than nothing at all. There's nothing more awful than nothing." The bailiff felt sorry for the soul and gave it a piece of advice. "Go, my little soul," he said, "and return to the world of living men. Don't bother to look back, because what can you see from down there? Nothing but the stars, and the stars are bright but cold creatures that have no pity. You mustn't expect them to intercede with God for anyone. Only the saints in paradise will put in a word for a poor, lost soul like you, and they, do you hear me, my little soul, like to be brought gifts. That's what the saints are like these days," confided the bailiff ruefully, and he went on. "Fly down to the world of living men, my little soul, and take a good look around you. If you see any deed that is perfectly good, take it and bring it back to heaven. It will make a fine gift for the saints. Just knock on the gate and tell the angel on duty that I asked for it. Once you've brought them three gifts, the saints will see to it that the gates of paradise are open to you. They won't hold your past against you. They don't like aristocrats. There's nothing they like more than a common soul that's managed to work its way up." The first gift. And so the poor little soul flew back down to the world of living men to seek gifts for the saints in paradise. It flew hither and thither, over cities, towns, and hamlets, through brilliant sunshine, torrid heat, and foul weather with needle-sharp rain, in and out of cloudless summers that ended in showers of gossamers, and winters with their endless snows, looking and looking until it felt that its eyes would pop out. Most of all, it looked for Jews, and as soon as it saw one, it flew down to look even more closely. Could it perhaps be about to witness some act of great devotion to God? Sometimes at night, it even peered through the slats of shutters in the hope of finding one of God's fragrant flowers, that rare bloom, a perfect good deed, in the quiet room of some town. In vain. Often, it sprang away from the window with a shudder, or in a state of shock. Thus the seasons and the years went by, and the soul grew melancholy. It had seen whole cities turned into graveyards, graveyards plowed into fields, forests cut down by the axe, stones ground by water into sand, riverbeds moved from their place, stars fall by the thousands from the sky, souls fly by the millions up to heaven, and yet never once did God remember it, nor did it find a good deed that was perfect. "This world," thought the soul, "is such a poor place. Human beings are so mediocre, their souls are so gray, and their deeds are so petty. Where is one to find anything special? I might as well have been condemned to wander about homeless forever." It was in the middle of this thought when something flared red in the night. The soul looked down and saw that the light came from a window of a house. Inside the house, masked robbers were holding up a wealthy Jew. One of them held a burning torch, while another pressed a gleaming knife to the man's breast and exclaimed, "Don't make a move, Jew, or this blade will come out your back." The rest of the gang was busy ransacking chests and closets and taking everything of value. The Jew stood regarding the knife with perfect calm. Not an eyebrow flickered, not a hair stirred in the white beard that came nearly down to his waist. It was as though the whole matter failed to concern him. "The Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh," he thought. "Praised be the Lord's holy name." And his pale lips seemed to murmur, "I wasn't born with any of this, and I can't take it with me when I die." He remained untroubled even when the last drawer of the last chest was yanked open, and out came bags of silver, gold, precious stones, and other valuables. Indifferent to parting with it all, he simply looked on in silence. Yet all of a sudden, as the robbers were taking one last little bag from its hiding place, he gave a start. Eyes ablaze, he raised his right arm protectively and opened his mouth to cry out, "Don't move!" A hot jet of red blood spurted out in place of a cry, spraying the little bag. The knife had done its work. The robbers fell on the bag and ripped it open, certain that it held the most precious, the most valuable possession of all. They were wrong. The Jew's blood had been shed for nothing. The bag contained no gold, no silver, no jewels, nothing, indeed, that had the slightest worth in this world. Its only contents were a bit of earth from the Holy Land that the rich Jew had wished to be buried with when he died. It was this he had laid down his life for. The soul seized a handful of the bloody earth and flew straight to the gates of heaven with it. The first gift had been brought. The second gift. "Remember," the angel called after the soul as the gates of heaven swung shut again, "you still have to bring two more gifts." "With God's help, I'll find them," thought the soul cheerfully as it flew back down to earth. Its good cheer did not last forever, though. Once more the years went by without its sighting a perfect good deed, and once more the soul thought sadly, "Like a live spring of water, the world sprang forth from God and ran off into time. Yet, the further it runs, the muddier and dirtier it grows. Gifts fit for heaven are far and few between. Men have become diminished, their good deeds plainer, their bad ones drabber. You can look all over and not find a single one that is special. If God were to weigh in one weighing all the good and bad deeds of this world," thought the soul, "the needle of the balance would hardly move at all. The world is too weak to rise any higher or plunge any lower. Like me, it's trapped between the starry heavens and the black depths, while the prosecutors and defense counsels go on endlessly feuding, just as light feuds with darkness, heat with cold, life with death. The world teeters this way and that, unable to go up or down. Human beings are born and die. They marry and divorce, rejoice and sorrow, love and hate, hate and love, and on and on and on." A blare of horns and trumpets roused the soul from its thoughts. Looking down, it saw a city in Germany. All this happened long ago, of course. Oddly sloped roofs surrounded a town square, which was filled with a colorfully dressed crowd. Other townsmen pressed their faces to the windows or straddled the railings of the packed balconies that projected beneath the roofs. In front of the town hall stood a table covered by a green cloth trimmed with fringes and tassels of gold. The town magistrates sat around it in sable robes with gold clasps and white feathered hats with gleaming badges. Beneath a seal of a taloned eagle, the burgomaster presided over them. To one side stood a Jewish girl in shackles. Not far from her, 10 vassals restrained a wild horse. The burgomaster rose to his feet, faced the square, and read the verdict from a sheet of paper. "This Jewish damsel has committed a grave sin, a sin so heinous indeed that God himself in all his mercy could not possibly forgive her for it. Stealing out of the ghetto on our holy day, she polluted our pure streets. Her shameless eyes stained our sacred procession and the holy icons that we carried through our town with music and hymns. Her accursed ears heard our drums and the songs of our innocent children dressed in white. Who knows if the filthy devil himself, in the guise of this accursed rabbi's daughter, did not touch and defile our holy relics? Why did he, the devil, wish to inhabit such a beautiful creature? For I cannot deny that she is beautiful as only the devil could make her. Just look at those brazenly bright eyes beneath their silken lashes. Look at that alabaster complexion, which only grew paler and purer during her long imprisonment. Look at those fingers, so fine and thin it is as though light passes right through them. Why did Satan inhabit her? Because he wished to tear your souls away from the rapture of our procession, and he did. Just look at that beauty, he caused a young knight from one of our most distinguished families to cry out. Worse yet, it happened during the Mass. Yet when the parade officials saw her and caught her, the devil put up no resistance. And why not? Because you, God's flock, were without sin, having just been shriven by confession so that he had no power over you. We therefore sentence the devil, in the guise of this Jewess, to the following. Let her hair be bound by its long devilish braid to the tail of a wild horse, which shall drag her until she is dead through the streets that her feet trod on in violation of our laws. Let her unstaunched blood wash the cobblestones that those feet polluted. A wild cry of joy resounded from every mouth. When it had subsided, the condemned was asked if she had a last wish. Yes, she replied calmly. I would like to be given a few needles. Ha! She's gone out of her mind with fear, the magistrates remarked to one another. Not at all, said the girl in a cold, tranquil voice. It is my last wish, and I ask to have it granted. She was given her request. And now, ordered the burgomaster, tie her to the horse. With trembling hands, the vassals tied the rabbi's daughter's long black braid to the tail of the rearing wild horse. Stand back, the burgomaster ordered the crowd in the square. The crowd parted noisily and pressed itself against the walls of the houses. Each hand gripped something, a whip, a rod, even a plain kerchief to spur on the horse. All breaths were held, all eyes glittered, all faces were aflame. No one noticed in the excitement how the condemned girl bent over and thrust the needles through the hem of her dress and deep into her flesh to keep her body from being exposed as it was dragged through the streets. No one but the wandering soul. Free the horse, ordered the burgomaster. The vassals jumped back and the animal broke loose. A cry from the crowd broke loose too, and all the whips, rods, and kerchiefs slashed the air. In a wild frenzy, the horse galloped out of the marketplace and through all the streets of the town. The soul did not wait to see the end of it. Seizing a bloody needle from the leg of the rabbi's daughter, it flew straight up to heaven. That's your second gift, cheered the angel at the gate. The third gift. Back down to earth flew the soul in search of one last gift. Once more long years went by, and once more the melancholy soul thought what a petty world it was, pettier than ever, full of little people and little deeds, the bad ones no less than the good. Once it thought, if God, may his name be praised, ever visits his last judgment on the world, and if the counsel for the defense stands on one side, shaking out the bits and crumbs from the white bag, and the counsel for the prosecution stands on the other side, shaking out the grit and grime from the black bag, it would take forever to empty both. That's how tiny everything is in them. But when the bags are finally empty, what will happen then? The needle will stop in the middle once more. When all things are so small, nothing can outweigh anything. What difference can one more feather, one more wisp of straw, one more flake of chaff, one more particle of dust possibly make? And what will God do then? What will his verdict be? To turn the world back into chaos? No, the sins will not outweigh the good deeds. To bring the redemption? But the good deeds will not outweigh the sins either. What then? Carry on, he will tell the world. Fly on between heaven and hell, between love and hate, between tears of compassion and rivers of blood. Fly on forever and ever. The sound of a drum awoke the soul from this oppressive thought. Where was it coming from? The soul had lost all sense of time and place. Down below, it saw a prison. Sunshine glanced off the bars of its small windows and glittered on the bayonets of the rifles stacked against one of its walls. The soldiers who had put them there now held knouts in their hands. They were arranged in two rows with a narrow passageway between them. Someone was about to run the gauntlet. But who? It was a Jew, his meager body dressed in a torn cloak, a skullcap on his half-shaven head. The soul watched as he was led out from the prison. What had he done to deserve such punishment? God knows. It was long ago. Perhaps he was a thief, perhaps a burglar or a murderer. Perhaps he had even been framed. After all, it was all so long ago. The soldiers smiled and wondered why there were so many of them. Their victim wouldn't make it halfway down the line. Yet as the Jew started down the gauntlet, he walked steadily without stumbling or missing a step, taking blow after blow in his stride. The soldiers were enraged. Who did he think he was, staying on his feet like that? The knouts whistled through the air and lashed the thin body like snakes. The blood spurted out, more and more of it. Halfway down the line, a soldier aimed too high and knocked the Jew's skullcap off his head. A few steps farther on, the victim noticed it. He halted, as though deliberating, and then, unwilling to continue bareheaded, turned around to retrieve the fallen cap. Bending over, he picked it up, turned around again, and started back down the line, soaked in blood but serene, his skullcap on his head. He kept walking until he collapsed. As soon as he fell, the soul seized the skullcap and flew with it straight to heaven. The third gift was accepted, too. The saints interceded for the wandering soul, and it was admitted to paradise. And when the three gifts were displayed there, a connoisseur's voice was heard to say, "Ah, what beautiful gifts! Of course, they're totally useless, but to look at, why, they're perfection itself."
That was Three Gifts, written by I.L. Peretz and read by Joanna Gleason. The translation by Hillel Halkin may be found in the I.L. Peretz Reader, edited by Ruth Weiss and published by Schocken Books. You're listening to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond, a co-production of the National Yiddish Book Center and public radio station KCRW, Santa Monica. The full 13-hour series is available on cassette from the National Yiddish Book Center. For information, call 1-800-9-SERIES, 1-800-9-SERIES.